I know you hide the one called Hawk behind your door. Hear me, and hear me well. Tomorrow, when the moon is high, I shall return. Hawk! And the gold will be given to me, or you shall have your lady back with her innards tied around her scrawny neck, and this place shall be wiped from the face of the land.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of That's So Random, a random movie podcast. I'm Heath Lambert. If you know me at all, you know that there's a lot of things that I adore. From Canada, Alanis Morissette, Our Lady Peace, Ryan Reynolds, add a couple more to the list, the hosts of ADHD DVD, which I love, Haley Lear and Justin Morissette, how are you this evening?
I feel honored to be a part of that.
Yeah,
list.
What a nice intro that was. Glad that we can spread some, you know, Canadian cheer south of the border here. Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you.
If you like my show, but you wish that it were funnier, had a consistent like co-host chemistry, and was put out by people who have like genuinely ideal podcast voices, like unreal. You can tell that you are broadcasters of some stripe in your real jobs. Give them a listen. You will not be sorry. I was just listening to the new episode on my way here. So
thank you. That is so nice. I always think I have a very grating podcast voice.
No, not
so
at all.
I love to hear that. Thank you.
It's soothing, in fact, I find.
Oh, God bless you.
I feel like we are kind of all over the map too with the movies that we choose on a week to week basis. So we should fit right in around here. Yeah. I understand it.
We embrace chaos. There is a level of randomness to your guys' show. The big difference is yours is based entirely around physical media, which, as you can see behind me, I'm also that guy.
Yeah.
But my show is based entirely around streaming, which has its benefits and its downsides, mm-hmm. especially when dealing with other countries and movies aren't always the same across.
I really wish we'd been able to make it work to watch that Adrian Grenier piece of garbage this week.
I think it would have made for a more interesting conversation.
Yeah.
I really would have wanted to see if it was a Haley hates it, because I'm betting she hated this one. We'll find out.
Oh, I feel like that's a sure bet right there. I would not bet against you.
Is Hawk the Slayer from 1980. Actually, before I get into that, I want to say one more thing. I'm not going to get into details. People can Google it. But our man, Justin here, did something that a lot of us think we would do or wish we could do, and that was look everyday stupid evil in the face and say, not on my watch, motherfucker. And he paid the price for it. And I'm sure he would bristle at a word like hero, but he's my kind of guy. We'll say that.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. I certainly feel more heroic than Hawk the Slayer, I will say that. I wish I had a sword that just whipped around like a boomerang and came right back to me, though. That'd be pretty sick.
Would have helped you out.
Definitely. Yeah.
Or to have like a giant and a dwarf and an elf. Well, dwarf is... I put that in big air quotes because he's...
Yeah.
You notice they always film him standing next to the guy who's 6'7"?
I was like, that guy's 5'10". That dwarf is 5'9" and a half.
And even the giant's like 6'7" is tall, but that's not a giant.
I have to say, too, before we get into the film at all, I was just about bowled over by the reveal right there that this movie came out in 1980. Because if you asked me to guess, I would have said 72, probably, like at the latest. Like this,
you would think, like pre-Star Wars.
It feels so cheap and small, and yeah, the fact that that number starts with an 8, I am absolutely astonished.
Well, I would have thought for sure that the way this movie came about was it's playing off of and trying to cash in on the success of things like Conan the Barbarian or Kroll or Dragon Slayer or any number of other Beastmaster. This predates it by at least 2 years. This came out 2 years before Conan the Barbarian. So someone just decided, this is the fantasy story we're going to do on no budget whatsoever.
Yeah, and I would have thought, too, that like this might have been riding the same fantasy wave as something like Excalibur, but that comes out the year after this.
It's also crazy, right? It's
crazy, yeah.
I'm betting the first thing that caught Haley's attention was Jack's dad.
Yeah, genuinely.
Jack's dad from Lost is our main star.
In all caps, I wrote Christian Shepherd and then like 40 exclamation points. I was very excited about that. I've never seen him in anything aside from Lost, but anytime I see a Lost alum in a film, I get very, very excited.
Well, not that he wasn't a handsome man in Lost, but he's quite the young,
quite snack, dashing,
if you will, in this film.
Mm-hmm.
And the only other person sort of, well, maybe not only, but of note is Jack Palance as our villain, Voltan, who is playing to the back of the house, man.
And not in the movie nearly enough. I feel like I would have enjoyed this so much more if he had about 300% more screen time. Like, he is so great. I don't know that he knows what's going on in the movie, but he is like fully giving it 100% on every single take, every single line. I thought he was magnetic. I really enjoyed the movie every time he was on screen. Every time he was not, however, oh boy.
I would say he's giving 275%.
They couldn't have him in every scene because he was chewing that scenery too hard. I know,
yeah. The sets would have collapsed. Yeah,
they wouldn't have any forest left.
Yeah.
He would have ate all the cobwebs that they got at Halloween, Halloween
Spirit
Adventure.
Halloween, yeah.
And put a green light behind it.
I did feel some amount of hope, though, at the beginning, not just for myself, but especially for Haley, who, you know, I have subjected of late to some real choice films that she has not enjoyed. So, you know, I do try to keep her in mind as we watch things for the podcast. And, you know, have I really, sent a stinker your way, Haley? I've done it a few times over the last several months, I'll be honest. But I do feel better a little bit this week knowing that A, I am not responsible for this. and B, I did think you might like it at first, yes, because of the appearance of Jack's dad. But that hope, unfortunately, quickly dwindled on my end.
I'm going to assume that both of you have zero history with this movie. That's not true for me. I actually have a Hawk the Slayer story. When I was, I don't know, 6-7 years old, probably, my dad, God bless him, is like, hey, there's a movie that's on at like 2 a.m. tonight that I saw when it came out. You would really like it. It's got an elf who like runs really fast and there's like and shoots arrows really fast and there's wizards and stuff. And I'm like, dope. He's like, I'll record it for you on the VCR tonight because you can't stay up that late. And I went to bed dreaming, like the images I had in my head of what this Hawk the Slayer is going to be. Oh my God, I can't wait. And something went wrong and recorded.
You're imagining like Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings, essentially.
Pretty much. I mean, a child's imagination, like, he really sold me a bill of goods on this fucking thing. But yeah, something went wrong with the recording and it recorded some other thing completely and it crushed me. And I spent years thinking about the movie that never was.
Oh my God.
And I spent years waiting for it and it never came out on VHS. It never came out. Like, you could not find this movie. And then as years went by, I forgot about it. And then I got it for this show and light went on. I went, oh, this is that fucking movie that I dreamed about as a child. What a waste of time.
Oh, no. You finally like the dog chasing the car. You caught it and you're just like, oh, this is what I wanted.
Well, it's like a lot of things. And I wish more people in the world would understand this. A lot of things from your childhood don't hold up. And you don't have to like keep them so in your heart that you get angry on Twitter about it. Like,
And you know,
or you can be, you can be like, I still love this, but I do acknowledge it's bad. Like, I think that's a very sane take.
I think if you were like a kid or a young teenager, perhaps, who was very into, fantasy books and that sort of thing, like we said, it feels like this movie should be riding the wave of a bunch of different things that are much better known, but it is preceding all of them. And so I can't imagine if you are into that sort of stuff or you're, you know, like the Dungeons and Dragons type of kid in that era, that this probably would be a big landmark movie of like, wow, fantasy on screen in a way that I haven't necessarily seen to this point. It would be greatly outdone just a year later, but at this exact moment in 1980, perhaps could feel like a, you know, a landmark of the genre. Exactly. Yeah. Even if it does also have sort of the low budget production values of a lot of like BBC science fiction of the same era, you know, like they're just clearly in a room a lot of the time.
Well, like the castle has just, the walls are just like gold tinfoil.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Yeah, exactly. Clearly. Yeah.
I will say this though, for, I mean, obviously it's a low budget and they don't have any sort of, but I feel like there's an imagination involved in the way they do pull off the special effects. Mm-hmm. Like they look cheap and crazy. But at the same time, you're like, wow, someone came up with that idea. Like the two hula hoops flowing and like spinning on top of each other. That's like their teleporter. I'm like,
I thought that
that's
looked
kind
really
of
cool.
Ingenious.
Yeah, I thought that looked really cool. It, just from a lighting perspective, you know, it never looked like magic. It definitely looked like a solid object that was spinning around on set. But like, yeah, it did look cool for that time. You know, it's funny though to like, I have to like mentally shift now because I spent so much of this movie thinking it was the early 70s. And yeah, like you said, Haley, to think that this movie came out after Star Wars, I'm being
feels
too
crazy.
Easy on how the effects look at times.
But they didn't have a Star Wars budget, so
no.
You got to still hand it to them. That was one thing I did make a note of. Like, I watched it this afternoon with like a glare coming onto the TV, and I was like, I think this might be the ideal way to see it because it kind of like fudges out anything that looks like really bad and kind of makes it sort of pleasant. And I also will say the score, like the music in this movie, kicked so much ass. It was so good. I loved whenever it went kind of nuts with the synthesizer. I was so on board for that turn because it did not match the vibe of the movie at all. But anytime it came on, I was like, I did Google like Hawk the Slayer soundtrack. Like,
oh yeah. The best way I could describe this score is if what you really wanted was like an Ennio Morricone, like Sergio Leone type score,
yeah.
But who you hired to do it is John Carpenter. like that, I think is like the right splitting the middle between those two styles is a lot of the music in this movie. And yeah, I did think that was one of the better elements of it. You know, I think this is a movie that is plotted in such a way that I personally had a near impossible time paying attention to.
Well,
90 minutes long, and yet it feels like 2 hours, or, you know, it's just so, there's so little happening here that I had a hard time, you know, grabbing anything and hanging on to the movie at all as it was playing in front of me. One thing that I did really, you know, enjoy, every time that score got going, I thought the music was a real standout element, even though it's goofy as hell, and like you said, does not really fit
it's
the vibe.
It's for a different movie, yeah. But it is very good. Like, Heath, you're much better with your podcast of, like, actually going through the plot of the movies you watch. Justin and I are terrible at that, and I was thinking about that with this movie, and I was like, if someone, I literally watched this 4 hours ago, and if someone said, what happened in that movie, I would not know where to begin. I would say there's a man and he has to kill his brother. That's the gist.
That's why I have a page and a half of notes.
God bless you, because I was like, I'm not going to be helpful in this realm whatsoever.
Well, and for my show, I watch everything twice. Like when I get it, I'm like, oh, that's my movie next episode. Cool. I'll watch it just to get like the lay of the land. And then I'll watch it again closer to record and take notes. So for some Smart. Real stinkers that I've had to watch twice, it's
torturous.
Torturous, yes, exactly. I was going to say it's plotted a lot like a Western. So what you said about the music is actually pretty apt, because it's a very like the outlaw everybody knows, and we got to hire him. It's almost like Unforgiven, like, you know, like these nuns are in trouble. Call that guy. Everybody knows he'll come and help out. Like,
yeah.
And he's got to go, like, assemble his Magnificent Seven, basically. Yeah, and I felt like that element, there's a lot of putting the team together in this movie. That's what all that spinning hula hoop portal stuff is about. She's, like, sending him, teleporting him off to go grab new members of the Fellowship, essentially. And in that regard, it did feel very Lord of the Rings inspired to me, even if, you know, I don't know that there had, maybe the animated Lord of the Rings had come out at this point. The books were obviously very famous long before they were films, but I felt like big time influence of, and maybe that's just a cliche or a trope in a lot of different genres, but it did feel very fellowship to me.
Except in Lord of the Rings, when we gather new heroes, they're not just running a, every time they're running afoul of some kind of bandit in the woods and he comes along to help them out. Like,
they get saved. They're all damsels in distress.
It's a lot more organic, basically, or they're brought together specifically at the High Council, Elrond, so on, etc. It's a lot cleaner than, you know, like, let's just go grab these guys. But it sort of felt like they were ticking different types of characters off of a list, right? Like, you're going to need an elf, you're going to need a dwarf, you're going to need a man, a giant. You're going to need all these types of fellas, essentially, which is, I think, what lent it more of a Lord of the Rings vibe than just the standard kind of putting the team together sort of
montage. See, I find, like, if it had just been a putting, you know, man is hired to save the church, kind of like almost like Blues Brothers-y, like he's got to save all these nuns. But the beginning with the dad getting killed in this, like, it really threw me for a loop because I thought it would be a lot more of like, I don't want to say a family drama because this isn't that, but I thought the fact that they're brothers doesn't really, it feels like it, I don't know how to explain. There's no real like familial tension. Like there's no like, this is my brother, I don't want to kill you. It's just, he might as well just be a random villain. At least in my opinion.
we have the flashbacks to the sort of the love triangle of,
yes,
Voltan wanted Hawk's lady friend and she wasn't having it. And so he killed her but they didn't have to be brothers for that. Like, he could have just been some guy he knows. I don't know.
They could have been buds. Yeah, it could have been anything. I found that element, like, kind of, like, if they had played into it more, it would have been valuable, but they didn't really use that very much. What I'm saying is the characterization in Hawk the Slayer wasn't great.
What?
Shocking to everyone.
They just don't have similar vibes at all, even. And that, not even in like a evil twin kind of way. Like, they just, there was nothing about these performances or these actors really that said brothers, other than the script repeating it over and over.
Especially since, I mean, I didn't look at the ages, but John Terry's probably in his early 30s, I would guess, in this movie. And Jack Palance is already conservatively 75 years old. How are they brothers? You know, he's as old as the dad that he kills, like, easily.
Yeah,
definitely
more uncle vibes than brother vibes.
I mean, I guess killing your own dad sets him up as like, see how evil he is, he killed his own dad, and is, but I don't know, there's other ways to do that. At least he's not, usually the way in movies that they show someone's really evil is like some sort of sexual assault, so I'm glad we avoided that. Instead, I'd rather he kill his dad.
Yeah, he just murders a woman in a flashback who does not want his advances. So we get there eventually, but it doesn't start off at that point, which is nice. They ease you into that, which is good. I will say, like, when I saw that we drew a fantasy movie, I was kind of like, uh-oh. Like, I think a fantasy movie never really hits for me, with the exception being the Lord of the Rings trilogy, but I think that movie sort of transcends, you know, most genres. Like, I didn't even watch Game of Thrones, so it's like right out of the gate, I knew this kind of movie wasn't gonna be for me, but I did try very hard to watch it with an open heart, open mind. But you both nailed it at the beginning that I did hate it. But I don't think either of you loved it either. So, unless you did, maybe you did.
It has elements that I appreciate, the things we said. The music is pretty dope. The special effects are interesting for what they are, and I think kind of ingenious in their deployment on no budget. And yeah, Jack Palance is fun to watch in that he's just bananas in this. His performance is banana pants. But
he's playing it the straightest, basically. Like, you know, I mean, not that John Terry is really like hamming it up necessarily, but like, I feel like he is trying to inject as much real emotion, even if it's cranked up to 11 over the top emotion, he is trying to infuse some real life into this film. And I feel like every time he's on screen, it is kind of successful in doing that. Even if it, like, it's tough. It's weird to say that it's real life when it is like the most heightened, craziest performance in the entire film. But like, there's something there. Whereas like, I didn't feel like there's a lot to hang on to in John Terry as a character or a performance, really. Like, there's not a lot of humanity in our hero, I didn't find.
Well, the first time we see Jack Palance, he's standing outside of a glowing cave, like straight out of Mandy.
Yeah.
Just yelling at the top of his lungs, witch, witch.
And so many of his scenes, he is standing in front of, you know, a red backlit, you know, backdrop that's just like glowing blood all around him as he delivers these like insane monologues and soliloquies. So yeah, he's really a sight to see in this film. I had my hopes up a little bit coming into this one because as I turned it on, you know, sometimes I shouldn't do this all the time, but I did look it up on Letterboxd just to get an idea of what I was going to be in for. Who do I know who's seen this movie? Did they like it? So on, etc. And a lot of guys that I, you know, respect who also do a very successful bad movie podcast, guys from, you know, the We Hate Movies pod or from the Flop House.
I love that show.
Had all logged this movie, and a lot of them had given it, you know, at least middling to favorable reviews, saying, you know, 3 stars. I think this one's worth the time. I had a lot of fun with it. So my hopes were a little bit raised by that, and I wish I could see what any of those fellas saw in this movie, because I was not feeling it at all.
I could see if it was just Chris Cabin, because he's the most contrarian person on the planet, but if it was, yeah, I didn't look. If it was a bunch of them. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, they had
that
a nice time.
That is a phenomenon that I personally, we've talked about a little bit on our podcast, that I don't connect with, like the people who like bad movies, like knowingly bad movies, like The Room and things like that, the people who love, and I can never get on board with that. Like, I'm sure I do like movies that other people would consider bad, but to me, I'm like, no, this is good. Like, I can't, so whenever I see people ranking a movie like this really high, I just don't trust it. Like something isn't right. I'm very suspicious.
Yeah, for me, I'm not a big believer in the it's so bad it's good.
Yeah, like, don't mess with that.
So a lot of times it's just bad. Occasionally it's like, especially if it's something that they're purposefully making bad as a, like, you know, we like something like Sharknado, where it's like we're trying to make a bad movie. I'm like, no, thank you.
You can't do that on purpose. That spoils the fun of
exactly.
It. If you think you're doing it, then you're not doing it. That's kind of how that works, basically.
It's okay to like a movie or hate a movie.
It is.
It's fine either way.
It's okay to love Hawk the Slayer. Yes. If that's what you want to do, live your life.
I guess I was making the exact opposite point. I think something is wrong with those people. But I like your opinion better. That's much nicer. Is that, you know what? If you thought this was genuinely good, power to you.
I don't know. I think there's a way to, like, I can get down with a bad movie that's bad in a really fun way. And I think there are, like, certainly charming elements of this. You mentioned the special effects, Heath, and the kind of unconventional ways they find to do the things that they want to do without necessarily having the budget to pull them off properly. And the way that our elf character is just firing off his arrows from his bow and arrow. Or no, he's not the elf.
It's a giant, right? The giant has, like, the...
It's Ranulf.
No, I'm Ranulf. Crow. Well, is
both,
the elf.
There's also
who,
the
he's the archer.
Automatic
right?
Crossbow.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
It's like a machine gun.
Yeah, yes, that's who I'm thinking of. Yeah, the archer dude. The way that they shoot that, him firing arrows at hyper speed, it's like stop motion cutting, basically, so that like it's gone and then he's already reloaded it, but he never did anything because like it's just like auto reloading and firing off these arrows. And it was really annoying to me when this effect started, because they do it pretty early in the movie when they introduce this character, about 30 minutes in probably, and he's just shooting a ton of people during the climax of the film. It was one of those things, though, where the more it happened, the more it went from, like, kind of grating and can you believe how bad this is, to, like, I felt I was really enjoying it by the end, honestly. I think it's one of the better touches of the movie, the way that they are just using rapid fire, basically crossbow bolts, I guess.
Or, like, the elf. We need the elf to jump up into a tree that's like really, really high. What do we do? well, we'll just film him jumping out of the tree and run it backwards.
I did appreciate that. And we talked about it already. I thought all of the actors were kind of, I thought they were all kind of great. Like, just in the sense of that they were given it everything they had. I don't think anyone really phoned it in. Although I will say with the lead, like, part of me is wondering, like, do I just have like a trigger response to seeing John Terry, right? Christian Shepherd, that I just get emotional because of the finale of Lost. So I'm like, maybe I'm just putting way more in his performance than what he actually deserves. But I kind of thought all of the performances were pretty good, especially for a movie like this. I was like, no one was phoning it in. They were working for their paychecks, I thought.
For sure.
I want to give a special shout out to a one scene character who I thought almost stole this movie, and it's Christopher Benjamin playing a character named Fitzwalter, who even just him saying his name and the guy that he was like the squire to also like commanding him around by that name made me laugh a few times. But he's the guy who when they first introduce the archer, and I think actually he reveals himself to be John Terry, possibly. It's Hawk who's hidden under that cloak, right? When he's putting those arrows together and they're trying to swindle him out of his money. Was that Hawk? I think it might have been.
No, because they pull
this guy underneath the cloak.
That's the reveal that he's an elf, because they pull his hood off and he has the pointy ears. And they're like, oh,
so that is Crow. That's Crow.
Maybe we shouldn't have an archery contest with him.
Okay. Those two guys looked very similar to me, unfortunately. So I had a hard time clocking which was which on occasion. But regardless, they do that scene where they're trying to hustle this elf in like an archery accuracy contest. And the squire the whole time is just like begging his master, like, do not. He's gonna kill you. Like, don't do this. And the scene ends with the guy having been shot, and they're just like walking away. And as his master bleeds out, the Fitzwalter is just standing over him, being like, I told you you shouldn't do this. I knew your pride would be the end of you. Yeah. He's this, it's a very small, nothing character. I think there's a very easy way to do that scene where there is no second person in this little hustle routine. But I thought he brought a lot to that. And you know, like I said, there's not a lot to grab onto in this movie. It's very dry in terms of story, but that performance did delight me for basically the entire time that character was hanging around.
He killed it.
He also shoots their hats off and you can see them on a string fly away. Like, yank.
Harry Robertson seems to be the guy who, this is his brainchild, and he also did the music in addition to the screenplay story by, which I find very interesting that this really came from, it looks like, mostly just one dude. Like, that's, I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense. But there wasn't a ton of, you know, cooks in the kitchen with this one.
It was probably his D&D campaign that he runs every Wednesday night, and he was like, genius. Everyone needs to see
exactly.
This. Your show has something called the Busted Freak of the Week. Busted Ass Freak of the Week, sorry. And which this movie has a cornucopia of. Cornucopia.
Oh, there's so many. It's funny, I do watch movies now with that. But even movies we're not doing for our podcast, where I do have that as a thought in my brain, which it's like, which one of you is our freak? And you're right, there's so many to choose from. I'd be interested to know what your thoughts are, who you would pick.
Well, within the confines of the movie, I gotta go with the dwarf, especially when he eats that whole fish alive. That's a freak.
Absolute freak. Freak behavior, yeah.
But because the guy who plays the giant doesn't look too terrible in this movie, but if you look him up on IMDb, his IMDb profile picture 100% makes him the bus-ass freak of the week, because it's a wild thing to choose as your profile picture.
that's an intense mug he's given.
I don't think necessarily he's the gnarliest looking dude in this movie, but I do have to nominate the actor who plays the innkeeper, Roy Kinnear, who is the father of Rory Kinnear. As Haley, you just watched Men before watching this movie. So there you go. You got the father and son connection back to back.
And also the father of Veruca Salt in the original Willy Wonka.
Oh my gosh, he looks so much like his dad, or the son. He looks so much like his, no, son looks like dad. That's crazy. Roy Kinnear, eh? Wow. Yeah, I did just watch Men. We'll be talking about that on our pod this week. Just I got a lot of things to say about that.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
I mean, maybe this is too, thought number one, but Voltan, absolute freak. Like Jack Palance, not so much in real life, but in this movie, he was a busted ass freak. I didn't like,
Scarred up
yeah, anytime that
face.
helmet got removed, I was like, ugh. Like they
Well, but
really.
they save it. They save it for the very end, either because they didn't have the budget to do makeup like that every day, or Jack Palance was like, "You get one.
Yeah, don't, I'm not see
I'm going in the makeup trailer one goddamn time. Do not ask me
Yeah.
again," because it's always hidden behind this
Yeah.
helmet eye patch thing until the very
That's
end. They
true.
finally you get to see his burnt up
Yeah,
eye.
that was messed up.
They talk about it a lot. They're constantly bringing it up,
He's in such
and like.
pain from it that that's why he's like aligned with these cave wizards, because they're doing some kind of whammy on him that's
The
removing the
pain.
constant pain he's in, and so he's working for them. I have a question. In a world full of magic that everyone knows is, it's not like Harry Potter, we're like, whoosh, we're a secret. Everyone knows there's elves and dwarves and magic. How is there also nuns? Like, how is there a church of
I
God?
know. Is
Like the Christian God, how can those coexist? As soon as I see someone throw a fireball, I'm like, well, guess I don't have to go to church on Sunday because that's some
the
bullshit.
rationale that God gave these powers? Is that like what the religion is in this
If it is, they
universe?
don't
Like,
say it.
is that the jump we're supposed to make completely independently? Is that like the Christian God exists and he gave everyone powers? It's like, it's not an easy logic jump. That's a great point. I did not think about at all while watching it. And now this movie's just falling apart the more we discuss it.
I mean, the devil clearly
Yeah.
exists in this world, I think. Like, that seems to be who Jack Palance is in league with pretty well. I don't know. Yeah, you raise an interesting point for
What is
sure.
the theology?
I expected when they're like, oh, these are the sisters of so and so, I expected it to be like some made up
Yeah.
God or something,
Yeah, absolutely.
some mythical. But no, they're just like, no, we're nuns of
Yeah, if
God. I'm like,
you're
what do you mean God? Like capital G God? No
like
way.
Jesus Christ exists in this universe. Yeah, if you're in a fantasy world, you think you might as well make everything something made. Like, you know what I mean? Like, why would it not be some sort of witchcrafty kind of God? Why would it be like Christianity? That's such a good point. We gotta write
'Cause
these guys.
it didn't take seeing magic for me to stop being a Christian. All it took was like a science book. That's all it took me. Like, and these people are running around when they know there's witches. Like,
They're still like one upstairs. We love them.
speaking of, I do, if we're, highlighting performances that were rather enjoyable in this movie and actors who are giving it their all, very thankless role because I don't think her face is ever even revealed. She has like a covering over her eyes constantly. But I believe it's
Yes.
Patricia Quinn, who in the credits is listed only as Woman Sorceress. Such a thankless role. Her character does not even get a name at any point. But even though you can mostly just see her mouth and like her chin acting, basically, I thought she brought a lot to that kind of seer witch sort of role. I thought she was a lot of fun
She
in this
was,
movie.
and she's Magenta in the Rocky Horror Picture Show, which is a movie I do love a
Yes,
lot.
indeed.
But yeah, she is. That role I think would be fun to play though. So it's fun that they got like a kind of like she plays it pretty big for what I mean that as a compliment, for what the role actually is like, gives her. That was a good shadow. Good job, Justin.
Well, speaking of movies
Thank
that
you.
you gotta reevaluate as you mature, and Rocky Horror Picture Show is a movie that I saw when I was probably too young. I don't know, 13 or 14, and I hated it. But then as I've grown older, like everyone I know is like, no, that movie rules. What are you talking about? So, and I haven't gone back. I need to go back and give it another shot because I've matured as a human being. I would probably dig it now.
I also saw it too young and I also hated it. And then also was peer pressured to like, because I liked some of the songs so much that I was like, oh, it's a bummer. These like fun songs that you hear at like a wedding are in this horrible movie. And then I did rewatch it. Not all of it. Like, we are both correct that some of it is pretty bad. But I think if you look at it overall, I think it holds up. I think you would probably like it a lot more on a revisit. But there are moments that you're still like, this sucks. It is stupid. But it's not bad. I'd recommend a rewatch.
What else do we want to say about this movie? We don't have to go through the beat by beat like I usually do, because there's not a lot here. There's a lot of go get a guy, then we're going to sit around the church for a while, and the giant and the dwarf are going to argue about food, and then we're going to go get another, we're going to waylay some slavers, cool, and then we're going to go sit around the church some more. Like, there's a lot of sitting around waiting for stuff to happen.
There's also a subplot where it's like he had to go get gold, and then Voltan wanted the gold, and I also had a thing of like, if magic exists, why are we so concerned with currency in this film? Like, it just doesn't it? Like, I have that problem with most things. Like, magic is introduced into worlds, I'm like, why are we, like, why would we have money? Why would we have any of this? It feels so pointless.
This is the real religious conversation we need to be having, because magic is the god killer. Heath, you are correct. But the real god is, of course, money. And you're right, Haley. Why does money exist in a world where you can shoot fireballs?
It's just like, definitely. What are we doing here? And why does Voltan care about it?
I did like, though, them just constantly pulling out one gold coin at a time to be like, one more? What about, does that interest you, perhaps? And it felt very much like the John Wick exchange of like a big chunky gold coin for like one coin equals one whatever
body
I
want. Getting disposed of or whatever. It just was like, I did like that led to a really great Jack Palance line reading where he's like, you have no, I don't know what the actual line is, but he says something like, you have no bargaining power, because like basically Hawk kept being like, what about this, and Voltan's like, you have no power here, like what are we doing. I thought it was a good villain moment where he's just like, I'm winning.
I do have to mention this, because this is kind of a art imitates other art, or in this case, life imitating other art, I guess. But one of the movies that we've covered on our podcast, one of the movies that is near and dear to my heart, that is one of the earliest inductions into the ADHD DVD pod canon, is a little 1991 popcorn film called The Rocketeer, which of course stars Timothy Dalton as a made-up villainous movie star named Neville Sinclair, who's very clearly based on the swashbuckler. What's his name? Who am I thinking of? It doesn't matter. The guy who was in all of the Peter Pan. Freaking Errol Flynn. That's the feller. There we go. Thank you, Haley. That's why I have a co-host. He's very clearly based on Errol Flynn. Anyways, Neville Sinclair, within the film, at one point really does stab the hero of his movie. Or he's the hero of the movie. He really does stab the person playing the villain at one point. And it's supposed to be the Rocketeer, like, underlining that this man is so evil, he really did brutally injure someone on the set of his movie, and he doesn't seem to care about it at all. The number one note in the trivia of this film, Hawk the Slayer, is that Jack Palance was injured in a fight scene when John Terry's sword punctured his body. Palance did not stop. He did complete the take, and afterward, director Terry Marcel went over to see if Palance was all right. Palance cast any concerns aside and continued with the shoot. So I just felt like that is literally a scene in The Rocketeer. I had to point that out.
What a professional. My God.
He didn't come to mess around.
He was like, this is my moment.
Patricia Quinn also burned her hand while stirring a magic cauldron when too much flash powder was poured into the cauldron.
So it's a miracle anyone survived this production, let alone, like, there was no health and safety whatsoever.
And as you pointed out as well, Heath, Ferdy Main, who plays Jack Palance's father, is only 3 years older than Jack Palance.
There it is. I figured. Palance's whole evil plan is like, and this guy has now, he's killed his father. He's taken over his father's kingdom, which appeared to be, he has his own castle, sizable and whatnot. Why are you ransoming a nun for 20,000 pieces of gold or what? Like, you're already rich, I would think. It reminds me of just my last episode, and I hate to talk about it again, but Rebel Moon, a garbage movie in which a galactic empire with spaceships flying around are very, very concerned about the wheat crop on one tiny little moon. Like, you have to give us this wheat or we're all going to starve to death. No, you're not. You're the empire. What are you talking about?
Yeah,
Same
it
thing.
is like, yeah, like a billionaire really, really caring about like a $40 like bill or something where they're
It's
just
the
like, yeah,
principle.
it's just so, yeah. If I always said if I had hit even like a very normal like amount of money, you would like never hear from me again. I would just disappear into the night. And so it's very funny. This guy gets all these riches and he's like, no, I'm going to go harass some nuns.
It does feel like they're just set dressing, though, on some level. Like, they have Jack Palance in his, like, evil throne room or whatever, and it's like, this is not enough. We need something more besides gold tinfoil on the walls. What if we put a lady in a cage over his left shoulder? And that's basically what you see for half of his screen time in this film, it
It
feels
was like
like.
a disturbing moment of like when he's like, you're, or I guess it was Hawk's wife, his girlfriend, lady friend, whatever, how she's the one who scars up his face. And he basically says like, you made me so ugly. No woman would want me. I had to steal a son. It just was like, I hate to say it, but it was like big incel energy. I just was like, oh, I was very on edge for a large portion of this movie, just waiting for like, because it's in 1980. I'm just like, I don't know what the turn is. I was thankful it never went as bad as I was expecting with respect to that character and women. I mean, it still wasn't incredible, but I was prepared for a much darker movie, and I'm very thankful it didn't go as dark as I was preparing myself for.
Well, and we also have to kind of just take their word for how scary and intimidating he is. Because, again, he's a very old man.
He could just get
and
pushed over.
There's a scene where he's like, don't fuck with me. And he takes his sword and he cuts a loaf of bread in half. Like, oh, no. Like, and everybody's like, oh, my God.
He can still feed himself.
Like, no one's ever cut bread like that before.
He's the best thing since sliced bread.
This man can still feed himself. He can live independently. He's so scary.
But like, cut the table in half or a pillar or something impressive. Nope, just bread. Yeah. Literally a child could do that.
How, okay, you said he was only 3 years younger than his dad. How old were they then when this movie was made? Do we have the stats? Because I think he's departed now, right? Jack Palance, he's no longer with us, right? Oh yeah, he died.
Yeah, but in the 90s, he was doing one-hand push-ups on the Oscar stage, so he was still a vital old man.
Oh, he died 2006.
Well, Jack Palance was 61 when this came out, so the old man
64.
Playing his dad would have been
That's
64. Yeah.
Very funny.
But they both look a full decade older than that still.
In the 80s, everyone looked 20 years older than what they were.
Which means, again,
probably
he's easily
tobacco.
30 years older than his, air quotes, brother.
Yeah, I don't want to, I mean, kind of thankfully they didn't show the mom or explain her deal, because I don't know what the math would be on that. And I don't want to know, frankly. Yeah. Magic. You know what? It's magic. Yeah, sure. We can just write that off as magic. Not that he had like a 16-year-old bride or something horrible.
Well, it's funny too, because you guys mentioned that obviously not only does Jack Palance kill the father, but he has killed the wife as well. In flashback, it's already happened. We learn about it a little bit later in the movie. But as I was looking up the film on Letterboxd to see those reviews that I mentioned earlier, I was doing this maybe like 5 minutes into the movie or so. The synopsis for this film says, Hawk the Slayer, after seeing both his father and bride die at the hands of his malevolent brother Voltan, sets out for revenge and the chance to live up to his title. And I'm sitting there thinking, he killed a bride? Was there a reel missing from the cut of the movie that I'm watching? But very funny that they just don't even try to conceal any of the secrets in any of the synopsis.
It does make me wonder why he didn't, like, what is the time between Voltan killing his wife and killing the dad? Because I'm like, was he just kind of like, oh, man, just gonna let my brother run rampant after he killed my wife? But when he like,
I'm gonna wait for him to kill one more person I love, and then I'm really mad.
I let him off with a warning when it was my wife. But if you did our dad too,
they made no effort to make either of them look significantly younger. So it does make you believe, like, was this like a few months ago? Could this have been 10 years? Like, there's no.
But also, the scene where Voltan kills the dad at the beginning, the movie is so early. Like, you have not gotten any sort of chance to establish your footing in the world of this film whatsoever. And then it's just like Jack Palance bursts into a room and stabs an old man out of nowhere. I was like, what the heck? And I was, again, setting my expectations too high in the early going because, you know, it feels like, oh, things are really happening in this movie. Maybe this will be a really fast-paced movie where lots of stuff goes down. And the plot just goes glacial after that.
Yeah, they press the brakes pretty quick.
There's another cool, cheap effect at the very beginning when the dying father gives the mind sword. What the mind part of it is, I don't know. But when he passes that on to Hawk and the glowing green stone goes into, and the pommel or the handle of the sword is like a closed hand over this jewel. And it's an open hand. So it's just someone with like a silver glove on holding really still. And then the gem goes in it and it closes around it. I found that kind of charming.
It gave me high hopes that I'm like, this might not be like my kind of movie in general. Like I said, I don't really click with fantasy, but I was like, but it might have fun little like cool moments like that where you can appreciate like the scrappiness of those kind of effects. But then they spend so much of this movie just in a room. Like,
I did like the glowing orbs,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, the orbs are cool.
I did love all of like the glow-in-the-dark little bouncy balls, essentially. And yeah, when the old man first plunges the sword into the ground next to him and you see the hilt of it as this giant fist, it really does look like a sex toy, I thought. So I was laughing at that early on. But I will admit, Heath, you are correct. When that hand comes to life and opens up and grabs the stone and then seals again, that's a really neat effect. I think that actually did come across pretty well for when this movie was made. And as we've said many times, the very obvious lack of budget it had to be made from.
And so is when the witch arrives to like rescue our heroes. She shoots a guy with basically a silly string gun through the door and just covers this guy with green silly string. And it looks so dumb, but also it's absolutely perfect.
Yeah, like, it fits. Yeah.
There are moments of this movie, and that is certainly one of them, where it feels like what you would do if you were making a movie with your friends on a Saturday night, you know, like, just for shits and giggles.
Gotta get creative.
And not, you know, something that was actually going to go out in theaters starring Jack Palance. And I do like those moments
of it.
Yeah,
that is fun. I have a thought experiment or a question that none of us might have. We might not have answers for it, but it is fun to think about. So this movie very clearly has the gall to set itself up for sequels that did not happen. And I was trying to think of other movies, maybe like, you know, some that are more mainstream, where it's very clear they're setting up for a sequel that just, it's like the people did not demand it. And I couldn't really think of too many. Like the main one I thought of is like the female Ghostbusters, a movie I did love. I genuinely like that movie, where they clearly set it up where like, oh, there's going to be another one. And then it just never happened.
We're coming back to take on Gozer the Gozerian. Yeah. You guys have heard of that guy,
and
right?
Then
no, we're never.
Speaking of incels, they ruined my female Ghostbusters. But I was like, what is a, like, is there a very famous example of a movie being like so clearly set up for sequels that just people did not want?
I can think of three examples off the top of my head. And oh, the balloons just went off as I made that three hand sign. I can think of three standouts in my mind. And like in some situations, like it makes sense why this would be the case. The first one that I can recall is The Golden Compass, adaptation before they changed gears and tried to make His Dark Materials into an HBO series made in conjunction with the BBC as well. But that is a movie that I think has some, you know, there's some good stuff in there. I think Sam Elliott is the voice of that like killer polar bear is pretty awesome. And that's a really good looking special effect. And there's some, you know, commendable stuff in there, but that's a book series. So like the fact that it is ending on a cliffhanger and turns around and basically says, see you next year. And we never came back to it ever again. That's, I think, a little bit more.
That's forgivable to me. Yeah.
Sometimes you see these sequel teases and it's like, my God, the hubris to think
like the gall. I said the gall of them to think that we will follow this man on more adventures.
One of them, and some people would look at this as a hubristic one. I might look at it as a lost opportunity, and maybe we should have got some sequels here. But the very end of Robert Rodriguez and James Cameron's Alita Battle Angel caps off with Edward Norton being revealed as like the big bad villain of the entire movie, who's secretly been controlling everything the entire time. And he's like teased as like, oh, you're going to have to tangle with me next time. And I like Alita Battle Angel. I think it's a really fun movie, but obviously we never got a next time on that one. And so his appearance in that film feels utterly confounding. The other one that I would say is the Ryan Reynolds Green Lantern movie, which ends by Sinestro just randomly putting on the ring of power of the yellow fear powers and being like, I'm evil now, in the end credits singer, and people just being like, huh, all right.
I would actually throw out one that
you had three right out of your
very recently on your show. Any of the three attempts at this Dark Universe shit?
Ah, yes.
With The Mummy, Dracula Untold, all of those have like, yeah, Russell Crowe's going to be back as like Dr. Jekyll, right? He is not. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, you can rest easy.
You can stop trying this now. You've failed three times.
Got him. Absolutely got his ass. Yeah, you guys were great. You pulled so many. I don't know why I'm struggling to think of ones. I think they're usually the more, that's a really good pull, the Dark Universe. That's such a good example, because they had full
of
them as a unit.
Like the post Harry Potter, but certainly post Hunger Games world. Like it felt like we were getting that kind of young adult dystopian fiction adaptation all the time. And sometimes they just would plow ahead on making three or four Divergent of these things, no series. Matter who Maze was going Runner, to see yeah. them. The Maze Runner or Divergent, definitely. The Divergent movies are some of the worst I've ever seen. And they made three of them somehow. And I watched all three of them on a whim a couple years ago, because unemployment will do that to you. But I do feel like there has to be some other examples beyond The Golden Compass of that kind of YA lit adaptation that ended with a big, like, this is going to be a big franchise, and then just absolutely never was. But I can't think of any others off the top of my head, unfortunately.
They bailed on The Maze Runner, though. Mm-hmm. Or no, Divergent. They put out the two in theaters, and then the third one came along, and they're like, No. That's going straight to streaming or whatever. Like, we're not putting that out in theaters.
I think the third one did go to theaters too, but then they shifted gears and stopped making movies and maybe made a Netflix streaming show of the fourth book or something instead. Or maybe that's what they did with The Maze Runner. The Maze Runner definitely was they did not follow that one through, but they did somehow make two or three of them. And I don't know anyone who's seen any of them.
Not this gal.
Well, the guy who directed all three of those Maze Runner movies is the guy who's directed this next Planet of the Apes movie that's coming out.
Ooh, it's not week. Matt Reeves?
And is he not also the choice to make this Legend of Zelda movie as well? Is that the same
guy? I believe so, yes.
Yeah, so.
Interesting.
We shall see, but yes.
I would also maybe mention, it doesn't matter. This is a more interesting sidetrack than anything we were going to talk about Hawk the Slayer anyway. I just don't want to keep you guys too long. Another one I would throw out is, maybe we'll see it, maybe we won't, but the end of that last Transformers movie, when suddenly they're like, guess what? G.I. Joe's here.
Oh,
if that G.I. Joe versus Transformers movie actually happens, I'll eat my words, but I'll believe it when I'm watching it.
I totally forgot about that. That was
they
teased.
Want the Hasbro cinematic universe and just
dark-sided stuff.
Stop
dark stuff. I don't know why I just was so bold at the end of this movie that I was like, I know this is a thing that has happened quite a lot, but I was like, what are some good examples of, you know? And we've got a lot of them now.
No, that was a great
John
question.
Carter, also very similar to Alita Battle Angel, ends with the reveal of the big bad villain, who in this case is, who's the bald British guy who's an evil? He was literally Sinestro also in the Green Lantern movie.
Is that
so
Mark
he's
Strong?
Just the big bad revealed. Mark yes. Strong, yeah. He's like a secret alien who can go invisible or something at the end of John Carter, and he like reveals himself and is like, haha, John Carter, you foiled my plan this time, but we'll be back to get you. And that obviously never happened either. But also, like Alita Battle Angel, I like John Carter. I think it's a pretty fun
you,
movie. So.
Sometimes it's, you just can't be trusted. Sometimes you and these left field, like, actually, this was good. I don't know what's what with you sometimes. And I talk about movies with you every single week, and I'm still surprised.
Well, you're going to watch Speed Racer, and then suddenly you'll see the
I'll
vision
lock
again.
In
you'll
on
be
it.
Back on board and be like, he knows when something has been maligned unfairly.
Speed Racer rules.
Like Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Second opinion that makes me.
At very least, I mean, it's kind of silly in spots, but at the very least, visually, it's like nothing you've ever fucking seen. Like,
yeah.
It's okay. Wild.
I am excited to watch it. It's one that's feels like a big blind spot.
I just feel like I've been building it up for like 6 months now. We keep pushing
further
as far when we're going to do it on our show. But one of these days.
Let's see here. What do I have left in my notes? There's a cool moment. Cool is, I mean, I don't know. But
it's all relative.
There's a fight when Hawk saves Runolf, the one-handed guy. He throws his sword at a guy and gets him in the stomach at the same time that the other bad guy throws a knife at Hawk, and he catches it and throws it back at him. I'm like, this is some
John Wick shit. Yeah. It's funny because there were moments like that, like just nestled into this movie where, like, yeah, every once in a while you'd like get my attention again, and then I would lose it pretty much just as fast. That was a good one.
And the giant puts the head of the slavers in a very Jigsaw-esque trap. Like, hold this rope in your mouth that's holding up this giant mace, and if you can't talk or keep your mouth closed, it's going to smash your head. And he lasts about 15 seconds before he. I was like, wow, is this a Saw movie? This is wild.
The violence was like surprising, but I'm thankful it wasn't like disturbing, because I find sometimes like with these old movies they go real like gooey and like gnarly with the violence, and I sometimes can't stomach it. And I found this movie it was okay. It wasn't super, I don't know. It seemed I could stomach it.
I'm still looking up movies that teased sequels that
I should have never. We've lost Justin. The rest of the podcast
is going to be silent. I'm going to just name two more here. Please. One of these is on a listicle that I found. They mentioned Hellboy 2, The Golden Army, which is true insofar as that movie and the first movie are both laying seeds for like the closing of a trilogy that it is tragic Guillermo del Toro never got to make. He still could make it. I think why not? You know, it's not like Ron Perlman is visibly older when you put him back underneath all that red makeup. They could still.
Yeah. Do you see they're rebooting Hellboy again?
Yeah.
Already? I did see that. Yeah. Are you joking? Like, I love Hellboy. I'm a big comic book guy. I've always loved Hellboy, but those movies, especially after that last one, these aren't like box office juggernauts that we have to keep alive. Like, why are you doing this again?
The move, I think, and you know, not to discredit his writing or world building, both of which I think are very commendable as well, but the big draw for me of the Hellboy comics, which I do enjoy quite a lot, is Mike Mignola's art style. He just plays with shadow and darkness in a way that is like extremely signature, unique. Like, you will know that it is a Mike Mignola drawing the second you see 100%. It. And so to me, it's like, make animated Hellboy, which they did. They made some like direct-to-DVD animated films around the time the first Guillermo del Toro movie came out. And I have a few of those on DVD as well.
Kindred spirits, you too. So, yeah,
very much so. But like go the way of like the TMNT kind of mutant mayhem route, and maybe make it computer generate, like go CGI animation, and just try to be as true to that Mike Mignola art style as possible, because I think there is really a lot there that audiences would get down with. But the other example here is Eragon, which I guess is a good example of
the dragon. I think I read that book.
Like young adult.
Oh, the one that's a beat for beat ripoff of Star Wars.
Yeah.
I remember that. You can say nerds, Haley.
I would.
It's not
never.
A bad word. Like, your kindred spirits. Just say you fucking nerds. God. Now, my other only notes of note are, so Voltan shows up by himself outside the church and is like, I'm coming back tomorrow. Two things. Why didn't you just bring your army and attack right now? Why are you giving them 24 hours more to put their plan together? And also, why didn't Hawk and his crew just ride out right then and kill Voltan? Because he's all by himself. He can't. But we got to wait
a little longer
because it's not the third act yet.
I was just going to say it's because they needed the movie to be longer.
This movie is looking at its watch constantly.
And so are we, because I'll tell you what, 84 minutes or whatever this was felt real long, especially when you add Tubi commercials in.
But then the finale rolls along, and I felt like the movie ends on such a whimper.
It's so abrupt, yeah.
That like Tubi just cut to another movie. You know how it just autoplays, goes to something else that's similar to what you were watching? I had to look up and realize, it's a different movie. It ended? It's over.
What was your autoplay? Do you remember? Mine was like The Wizard of Something. And I was like, is this the sequel? And then I looked it up and there wasn't any sequel. So it was just something also from the 80s that I would hate. Something I wouldn't enjoy. I find it so fascinating, Keith, that this was a movie that was something that like kind of haunted you from your childhood. And this was truly like for this podcast, this was the first time you finally scratched that itch and saw it. And it just... Is there a little bit of, even if you didn't enjoy it, this is something we talk about a lot on our podcast where it's like, we buy these movies, we hold on to them for 13 years. We finally watch it. Even if we don't like it, like, was there a sense of like accomplishment or relief of having finally seen it?
Yeah, a little bit, but also it's something that I noticed was streaming a couple years ago and I could have rushed right out then. Yeah. I go, oh my God, Hawk the Slayer. I can finally watch it. I was kind of like, oh wow, that's on streaming next. You know, it wasn't until I got it for this that I was like, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
We're finally going to close this tab.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wouldn't say I feel accomplished for watching Hawk the Slayer, no, particularly.
Maybe that's a bit a hefty word. It's at least some...
Is your dad proud of you for having seen it? Do you think?
I could tell him, hey, I finally saw that shitty movie.
You hyped up.
Like it was The Godfather.
For 44
you should,
years.
Tom,
yeah.
For sure.
44 years later. Yeah, that's so funny. Because I sometimes do feel very accomplished when we finally see a bad movie I've been holding on to. And then other times it's exactly kind of that, where it's like just kind of like, yeah, like the way this movie ends, it's just a whimper. And you're like, okay, I guess I don't have to think about that movie anymore. I guess that's nice. I don't know.
Yeah, and the last note I have is sequel setup is optimistic.
Yeah, very optimistic.
Like you said, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know. We talked about kind of the wave of fantasy movies, you know, wizard and sword epics that kind of come not long after this. And those are all movies that I have largely not seen, but do have kind of a keen interest in. Like Excalibur is on my white whale list of targets when I go thrifting. I do want to find that movie. I do want to see it, even though Haley probably will not enjoy it.
But like sword core movies. As soon as a sword is a main component of a film, I'm usually checked out.
I've come so close to buying Krull on DVD from Sunset Records so many times, and I haven't done it because of the face you're making right now.
That's very kind of you.
But like this is the kind of thing that is a big blind spot for me, but I have an interest in examining, and it is unfortunate that, you know, my first foray into this genre, let's say, was with a film that has not exactly heartened me to want to dive back in for more.
I would say Krull is dumb fun. Dragon Slayer is kind of cool because just the practical effects of dragons and stuff.
I think that's the stuff that would charm me to a movie like this, like cool practical stuff. But I don't know. I think I'd give it 2 out of 5, which I think is still pretty generous of me. Normally, I'm pretty harsh with my star reviews, but I think there's enough. Like I said, the music is so good. Like I literally downloaded the soundtrack on Spotify, and I think the actors are going for it. And there's enough charming special effects that it doesn't feel like a waste of an hour and a half of my life. It's like it was kind of fun to see how they did certain things. So it earned 2 stars for me, which I think is pretty fair.
I will admit that I very nearly bought Masters of the Universe at the thrift store recently, only to open the case and find there was no disc inside. So that very nearly made it onto the list of things that we would be watching for our podcast. And I will keep my eye open for it in the future. Unless, Haley, you would rather that I just watch it on Tubi and spare you that experience.
Please
altogether.
Watch it on Tubi.
Yeah, I second that. Don't do that to our dear, sweet, beautiful Haley.
Please be nice to me.
Okay, fine.
But yeah, like I did a thing on, or I posted on Twitter about it. You guys have got listened to your show, have had me hunting down some physical media for stuff that I saw in theaters or when it first came out and then kind of forgot about, and then listening to you guys talk about it. And I was like, oh yeah, I did really like that movie. So I had to shell, like, you know how hard it is to find Bowfinger on Blu-ray?
Very hard.
Easy, but I did it.
Oh, that rocks. Amazing.
Brother, I got that on DVD when I worked at Rogers Video, and I had to special order it directly to the video store because that was the only way.
It would be easier if I could. I don't want to sound elitist or above you or anything, but like I can't fuck with DVDs anymore. Like I'm on the 4K.
Yeah.
I'm on
Blu-rays. No, I'm saying I bought this movie like 20 years ago.
Because if I can't get a movie on Blu-ray, I'm probably just not gonna. Like a movie that I really want to get on Blu-ray is Son-in-Law. The Paulie Shore movie, and that's a
sentence that no one has ever said before.
I saw it on Amazon for like $4. I was like, oh, I should get that. And the next day I came back and it said unavailable and you cannot find it anywhere.
Wow.
So that one I might have to settle
for DVD.
You
have much higher standards than me. I will still get a widescreen DVD. I'll get that trash. It doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, I think sometimes, like, certain movies that we've watched on the show, like, I mentioned this when we did Mandy, which was a very early movie that we covered, that, like, kind of the non-high def, not that it's, like, grainy or fuzzy in the same way that VHS is, but sometimes, like, that it lends it, like, a coziness, the like, that it's not, you know, been polished up and has the cleanest transfer in the world. It feels like... some movies kind of fit that vibe a little bit. So I can get down with it at times. But I also, like, you know, the movies that we are doing right now on our show, we're going to be talking about, it's probably already come out by the time this has happened, War for the Planet of the Apes. Like, if it's a movie like that that's a slick, glossy, modern action blockbuster, I want that as crisp as possible. But if it's something that feels like, even if it, you know, like Mandy, for example, I think came out in 2018, you know, has the vibe of something that belongs on VHS, I can put up with a little bit of fuzz in the picture.
Or like, there's a movie I really wanted called Late for Dinner. Probably no one's heard of it, but I really wanted it. And I was like, do I get the DVD or do I order the Spanish language version of the Blu-ray that will have an English language track on it?
Yeah.
So that's what I did. I bought it.
Respect.
The case says Los Hibernados. It's Late for Dinner is what it is.
That's incredible. I love that anyway, for you.
Before we go, it is that time of the episode where I press the magic button to see what next episode's movie will be, chosen completely at random from everything streaming. One second, I gotta keep my phone way away from the mic or it makes problems. Pressing the magic button right now. Next episode's movie is The Final Rose from 2022. Looks like it is a Tubi original. Thank God for Tubi. Tubi has saved this show. So many Tubi movies and a curse as well.
This looks saucy.
It looks like it is a slasher based in the world of The Bachelor.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's either going to be cool or very bad.
I genuinely cannot wait. I cannot wait to find out.
I guess
that's everyone's homework for next week's episode.
Yeah, slasher movies and The Bachelor, the two places where you want to be the final girl, I suppose.
I would like very much to thank Justin and Haley for being on the show. Where can people find you guys and your great, great show?
Spotify, iTunes, you know, wherever people get those sorts of things, SoundCloud even. ADHD DVD is the name of the podcast. It comes out every single Friday. We talk about movies that we have bought and forgot is the tagline. Basically things that you have picked up with the intention of watching on physical media and then just sat on the shelf forever. It's very common, I think, that people will buy books and not read them. And I thought maybe some people like me have also picked up movies and never watched them. And the show has unveiled that is indeed the case.
It's a common thread.
Whether it's one from our own collections or a guest coming on bringing something to us, we are talking about a different movie every single week. And of course, it's not always about just that movie. We spend a good 20, 30, sometimes 45 minutes.
Absolutely off topic, yeah.
Talking about anything, a lot of things that we've seen in theaters, things that are filling up our letterbox of late. So, it's a fun time. And if you enjoyed our appearance here, then why not come find us over there where we're doing this sort of thing all the time?
Exactly.
1,000%. And it's something that makes their show better than my show is because a lot of the beginning of the show is just two friends having a gab. They don't live by each other. They haven't seen each other in a week and they got to catch up. And it's adorable and great, and I love it.
That's very nice.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're also on Twitter, the ship that is sinking, that is that website, but you can find us there. I also, you pointed it out before, but you have an extensive physical media collection, and I would like to formally invite you onto our show at some point when we can get scheduling right again. If there's a movie that you've been really, like, you know, that you've owned for a while that you haven't quite watched yet.
Well, first off, thank you very much. I did not want to be gauche enough to ask to come on your show. No. Thank you very much. I'm glad you had a good enough time.
Yeah. We'd love to have you. Yeah.
I'm not a guy who blind buys shit very often, but I do have a small stack of stuff that was either gifted to me or, for instance, like, because I run a movie theater, and we used to run DVDs and stuff, especially like for kids' movies, and we've kind of phased that out completely. So I had a bunch of Blu-rays that were sitting around the theater that I'm like, I got a 3-year-old, I'm going to bring these home. And it's some stuff. So like, there's some kids' shows in there I haven't watched, like Detective Pokemon or Detective Pikachu.
A Justin fave.
I can send you a little list. But there's some stuff that my sons gave me that I haven't got around to watching yet. So a couple things, not a lot, but a little bit. The guy who you would get along with is my brother, Chris, frequent guest on this show. He has a thing on TikTok where every day he watches at least one or two movies from his collection, a lot of which he has not seen. He started at the beginning of last year, and he is only in the letters, I want to say M or N.
Holy smokes.
He has a
I keep seeing this thing on TikTok all the time. Like, it'll come up on, if you're just scrolling, it'll throw in into the middle of like some guy's live where he's got a physical media room that's just like bookshelves on every wall filled with Blu-rays and DVDs. And people in the comments are constantly asking, do you own this movie? And he has to race as quickly as he can to find it on the wall and show that he does have it. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen.
That also, your algorithm is locked in, brother. They know what you're about.
But yes, thank you very much. I would absolutely love to come on your show. Anytime you need a guest, I'll email you guys a list of
the
few things I do have that I have not watched yet.
Very exciting to me.
Myself, you can find me on Twitter at HeathLambert78. The show is at That's So Random P2 for some reason. The show has an email address, thatsorandompod@gmail.com. And the show is also on Slasher and TikTok, under either That's a Random Pod or That's a Random Podcast, or both. I don't know. I don't remember. But yeah, thanks again to Justin and Haley for coming on, classing this joint up a little bit. And we'll see everybody back here next episode for, what was it? The final rose on Tubi.
The final rose.
Enjoy that. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you for having us.